Okay. A new month, February 1st. And we're all still here. Isn't that great news? So, a couple of weeks ago, I was sent an advance copy of a new book that will be coming out relatively soon by a man named Edward Horton. Canadian. Can't be all bad. And he asked if I would do a blurb, just a little write-up on the book. And the book is called Death and Dying in Buddhism, A Reflection on Mortality. And so I thought, yeah, well, this should be interesting because that's something we all have in common, this mortality thing. And so I read it and I came upon something that I hadn't heard of before. And it was called The Four Fears of Dying. Now, I changed it a little bit, calling it The Four Fears of Aging, because I wasn't expecting any dead people today to show up. And I was right. And so I did a fact check. I went to Google and fact checked it. And there is something called the Four Fears. It's not a list, but it's found throughout the Buddhist texts. And I liked his interpretation. He did it in a really interesting, I think, sensitive way. So we'll start with the first fear. And I think, you know, we can relate to it. The first fear is losing the sense doors. Now, in Buddhism, we have six sense doors. We don't have five, we got six. So we've got sight, and we have hearing, and we have smell, and we have taste, we have touch, and we have mind. And so when the nose smells, if you're thinking about the mind thinks. And as we go through life, I can remember early in my life, my sense doors were just alive and well, and everything felt good, and I could hardly wait for the next exciting thing to happen. And then I started to age, and they weren't quite as good as they used to be. And then I got my first pair of glasses, and going, okay, yeah, I can understand how this is gonna work. And I can't hear quite as well as I used to, but I look at that as an advantage. Because most of this stuff doesn't matter anyway. And then, you know, smelling, yeah, you know, if you can't smell quite as good, that's good too. And taste, you hate to lose the taste. Because I find that there were fewer and fewer reasons to eat food. You know, price, inconvenience. Before lunch, I might say to myself, well, let's get it over with. And sit down and consume. The Buddha was very wise when he talked about food. He said, food is a medicine. And we need this medicine in order to survive and practice the Dharma. So there was a reason for it. And he said, don't get too attached to this food. You know, it might taste well, but then that creates desire. And you want more of it. And desire always leads to suffering, the Buddha said. And if you're a monk in the Theravada tradition, you only get two meals a day. You get breakfast after sunrise, and you get lunch before noon, and that's it. And I thought to myself, wow, that's really convenient, because the people that make the food for the monks don't have to cook all day long. After lunch, they're free to do whatever they need to do. So we have these sense doors, and we hate to lose them, but now, because of technology and medicine, we have a lot of workarounds. So we have the glasses, we have the hearing aid. If you're having a difficult time, you know, feeling the ground underneath you, you've got canes and walkers. But then another fear arises, the fear of being able to afford the workarounds. Do I have health insurance? Do I have a savings account? Some of the workarounds can be expensive. Sometimes you can go in and have a procedure done, and that will help the sense doors regain some of their efficiency. But can you afford it? It's expensive out there. I remember a few years ago, I had a cat bite. I was trying to give a cat a bath. Yes, don't want to do that. And it bit me. And my finger got swollen and pus was coming out, and I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, we have to operate tomorrow because this is really serious. And thankfully I had insurance. So my copay was only $1,700. And the operation itself was $20,000. And I couldn't love that cat more because he taught me a really good lesson. But that's the thing, we fear not being able to do things in the future because. Now the second fear is pain. And we all have pain, and we have minor pains, and we have major pains, and we have pain every day, or every other day, or once a week. That stuff doesn't go away. The problem with pain is it always happens in the present moment. It happens right now. You don't have pain in the future, unless you're thinking about having pain in the future. You don't have pain in the past, unless you did have pain in the past and you're thinking about it. But in this present moment, pain tends to block everything else out. It tends to mute all those sense doors. And all you can think about is getting rid of the pain. And of course, we have ibuprofen. And we also have meditation. Now, you might not think meditation is going to help you with your pain. But let me give you a personal example. When I began to meditate, I had so much pain. It was so uncomfortable. I couldn't figure out why people would even do this. My knees hurt, my back hurt, my shoulders were stiff, my mind was agitated. It was a terrible experience. And then somebody said, well, what you need to do is you need to face that pain head on. Don't try to run away. Don't try to avoid it. Head on. And say to yourself, what is pain? The answer to that is, man, it's a really strong sensation. And I label that strong sensation pain, which even makes it worse. So how about if you don't call it pain, but just call it a really strong sensation? And how about if you just observe it and try to find out some of the qualities of that pain? And you start to realize that it's always changing. It sometimes gets a little stronger, sometimes a little weaker. Sometimes it seems to even go away for a while. And then it comes back and says, no, I'm still here. Can you feel me now? And by doing that, it sort of breaks it down into a thing you can come to a place of acceptance with. Something that has its own nature, and you're observing it, but does it have to be you? Can it just be a sensation, an ever-changing one? So pain is tough, and I'm not saying that you can get rid of it, but I'm saying you can come to a place through observation of accepting it for what it is. Now, the third fear is the fear of losing self, losing ego, losing personality. And this is difficult because that's who we are. And its job is to keep us alive. So how do we get that thing? Why are we the only creatures on the planet that have this sort of ego personality thing? I can't address that. I have no clue. But we got it, and it's part of our birthright. And our parents gave us a name and made us learn that name. And then they gave us their name, and we had to learn that name, which of course was Mom and Dad. You know, and then our parents took us to grade school or preschool or first grade and took us to this building that had doors and windows, and a bunch of people that you've never met before. You had to go in that classroom without mom and sit there for the whole day. And what are you going to talk about? The only person you ever talked to was mom. And these people have nothing to say that mom would say. And some of them could even read. And you saw them looking at pages in a book. And you looked at those pages in a book, and they were just lines on paper. Didn't mean anything to you. And then the teacher said, we're going to teach you how to read that book. Those lines will come alive. Those lines will stimulate a massive hallucination in your head. And you'll be able to see, because of those lines, color and form and stories all taking place in your head because of those lines on that page. And then you kept getting smarter and smarter and more concepts and more words. And you started to feel like somebody. I'm somebody. And then you went out into the workforce and realized you weren't anybody. But you continued and you started to become somebody too. You had a career and you had peer groups and you got certificates and pats on the back. And it was just so wonderful because you could look in the mirror and see somebody that didn't exist in the beginning. Wow. And now you're getting older, and all those little perks of being somebody starts to fade. And you sort of wonder, now you've got retirement, and you have nothing to do, and you watch TV, and it tells you about the world through stories and pictures. And you say, what am I doing? Is this how it's supposed to end, being somebody, and end up being nobody? And Ram Dass talked about that. Ram Dass said, in the beginning, we're in somebody training. And towards the end of our life, we're in nobody training. And why are we in nobody training? Because nobody dies well. Whoa. Nobody dies well. It's true. Because if you're somebody and you have to die, it's going to be difficult. But if you're nobody, okay. But see, that's part of the practice. And if you're not practicing that, that's really scary. Because you're starting to become nobody now. And me, not having a regular job for the last 30 years, it was questionable what I was. You're a monk. Well, what the heck does that mean? You don't have to ever go to work again because your lifestyle is your job. Whoa, cool. But what's my lifestyle? Well, they'll invite you to give talks and teach meditation and listen to all the words of truth you're going to be sharing with them. And I thought to myself, I don't have truth. I have opinions. And you can't confuse the opinions with the truth. Because I can only point in the direction, but I can't tell you what to look at. Ah, the monk. Ah, wise. Well, what do you do, monk? I don't do anything. Whoa. But I do it well. The only problem with doing nothing is you never know when it's over. So what I have done is I have created a schedule for myself. Every morning, I'm up at 4 o'clock. Now, I know I heard the groans, and I know. But if you live in downtown L.A., like I do, it is the best time of day because it's the quietest time of day. The sirens haven't started yet. The helicopters are few and far between. Now and then you hear a cat calling out for a mate or a dog barking, but just like little stuff. And then I sit at my computer. I fire it up. Time to post on Facebook. Yeah. What am I going to post today? What do I want to share with the world today? How can I make this a little better place by what I post? Hour and a half, 2 hours later, I have 6 posts. But they're really good ones. It just took me a couple hours to find those 6 posts. Wow, okay. I posted one yesterday about being a zombie. I thought, wow, this is really cool. I said in the post, the only thing that really scares me about being a zombie is all the walking. And people like that one. So it's sort of that kind of thing, woven into a little Buddhist philosophy and a little kindness. And I, you know, good, it gives me purpose. I got a purpose. Facebook gave me a purpose in life. Then I have to leave all that mindscape stuff behind and go out into the yard of the meditation center and feed the cats. Wow, they're waiting for me. Kusala, you showed up again. Every day in my life, man, you're part of it because you feed me. You're my meal ticket. And they all line up and I give them the food. And then I go from the backyard to the front yard because we have some neighborhood cats that like to eat with us also in the morning. So I've got that. And then I sit out there and I see people walking by with their dogs and, hi, how are you? How's it going? How's the dog today? Oh, I like your cats. They're so cute. Look at all the colors they have. You know, and then that's done. And then I feed myself. And now it's about 9:30. Time for my first nap. I've been up for a long time already. So I take that first half hour nap. Get rejuvenated again. Check the email. What do I need to do? Do I need to go to the store today? Do I need more cat food? Oh, there's so much to do. And then, at night, about 7 to 8 o'clock, well, this day is done. Right to bed. And when you go to bed at 8 o'clock and get up at 4 in the morning, you're getting enough sleep. And I haven't watched late night TV forever, but if I ever want to, there's YouTube. I can watch it at 3 in the afternoon. I don't have to stay up all night. So this idea of being a self, this idea of having a self, and the idea of losing a self can cause people a lot of discomfort because that's who they are. And the job of the self is to keep us alive. We do not want to end our existence. This is really special. We were here for such a short time, and it took us an eternity to get here. How long was it before you were born? Man, that's a long time. And if you're not a religious person, how long will it be after you're dead that you won't exist? Forever. So here in the 60, 70, 80 years, if we're lucky, we have this special invitation to play on the planet Earth, to be part of the whole. And when you look at the planet Earth from like moon, it's really beautiful. All the colors, the clouds, man. And this is the only planet we know of that has life. How did we get here? Man, haven't got a clue. But here we are. I guess I could blame Mom and Dad for my existence. But they didn't know who I was going to be. They were just loved each other. And then I showed up. And I ruined the rest of their life. And now the fourth one. The fourth one is karma. The fear of karma. And why is that the case? For a Buddhist, they say, the karmic energy is what migrates lifetime to lifetime. And if you have good karma, it said you'll have a good rebirth. Maybe Palos Verdes. You never know. And if you have not so good karma, maybe Koreatown, where I live. So this karmic thing can cause a lot of fear because we can't remember all our past lives and what we've done in them. And we don't know if all the consequences have reached fruition and are now part of our life. So what still needs to be felt from all our negative karma? And it can drive you crazy. You know, always pack some good thoughts when you're thinking about old age. Because I tell you what, at 3 or 4 in the morning, when I get up, not that many good thoughts. And I'm thinking, where do all these negative thoughts come from? All the things I think back 20, 30 years, I shouldn't have done that. I couldn't believe it. I can remember their name. I can see the situation. It's like a little movie in my head. And if only you knew better, Kusla, you wouldn't have done that. But I didn't know better. I was just doing what I do. And with wisdom and hindsight, you could do it all over again and do it so much better. But we don't have that option. You might say, well, next lifetime. I'll do it better next lifetime. Now, I have never felt that I've had another lifetime. This seems to be the only one. And when I hear people who remember their past lifetimes, I hear they were king or queen. They were never a gas station attendant. I'm thinking, okay. So I don't know. And because I don't know, I'm fearful. And because I'm fearful, I have issues with everything. Because I can't see things clearly because the fear keeps distorting everything. And I'm going, whoa, whoa, well, how do I get past that? What's the end game? What do I need to do? Well, you need to understand that these fears generally only exist in past and future. And if you come to the present moment and you're not in a burning building, you're okay. You know, it's just like, okay, how do I get back? How do I get out of that journey of past and future and get back into the present moment? One of the simplest things to do is just to pinch yourself, because sensation always happens right now. You've heard the old thing, I pinched myself to see if it was real, because I couldn't believe I was there or talking to this person, and it was so cool. And because I was able to feel the sensation of the pinch, I knew I was there. Okay, so we come back to the present moment. We keep coming back to the present moment. And if you're a Buddhist, your practice helps you come to a place of acceptance. Eightfold Path. Buddha talked about it a lot. He said, I teach the path to the end of suffering. I teach the path to the end of karma. I teach the path to the end of all future rebirths. The Buddha at one time said, I don't teach people how to live forever. I just teach them how not to be reborn. Because every time we're reborn, we have to die. And in between that birth and death, there's years of suffering and pain and delusion and ignorance and stupidity. Every lifetime, we go through the same thing. We never get any better because we keep forgetting what we did the last time. But when you start to wake up to the present moment, you start to come to a place of acceptance with the way things are. Now you look at the world today and you go, how can I accept the way things are today? It's so confusing and it's filled with so many negative situations. The Buddha said, well, don't worry too much about that, because in the next moment, everything's different. Could be worse, but it could be better too. Constantly changing, recharging, being something new. Our job is to keep up with the change. Can we do it? Difficult. But the present moment helps us focus. When we come to that place of acceptance, we find that we have peace. Now, not world peace, not LA peace. We have inner peace. And that's our birthright. But it's hard to get there because you have to understand that everything out there is simply what you're making up. It's not real. There are real consequences, but when you see Susie and Sam and Joe, they haven't always been that way. They are constantly evolving and turning into something else, just like we are. But there's a consistency with all those lives that we have lived in this very one lifetime. And we seem to exist for a lot of people. And that's cool. So our self looks in the mirror and says, this is who you are. And your buddy down the street says, no, this is who you are. And your friend over there says, no, no, this is who you are. So who are you? You are a process. Seeking peace, working hard to find out what it all means. And once you get there, it doesn't matter anymore. Because nothing really means anything. It's just the value you've given it. I think that's all you need to hear from me today. Thank you for keeping me company today.